Right now, I'd like to introduce Adam Kaysen. He's the marketing. He's director of product marketing at FutureX. He holds a strong technical background and deep knowledge of enterprise class cryptographic ecosystems, and he originally joined FutureX's solutions architect. Adam?
Wonderful. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. So while I'm getting this pulled up here, what we're going to be talking about today is the role of hardened encryption on the cloud, and something where it's something that we're starting to see more and more of nowadays is taking traditionally on-premises security offerings that are used for high volume, high throughput, high security data processing and moving them out to the cloud in some way, shape, or form. So to begin with, just as an introduction here, what we talk about and what I'm going to be talking about when I refer to hardened security or hardware security modules or secure cryptographic devices or some variant of that, what I mean by that in the context of this presentation are secure, tamper-evident, tamper-responsive devices, typically validated at FIPS 140-2 level 3 or greater, that are used for high volume, high throughput, and high security data processing. And so what we in this event here typically focus on the most in this general area would be aspects of design, development, and certification. And so the one other area that I want to bring into focus for this presentation in particular is the implementation side as well, because that has some real strong impact on how the design and development and certification of these devices are conducted. And it's one more aspect of the process that we want to make sure to focus on fairly heavily. And so the core thesis of this, what we're going to be talking about today, is how with the changing view of the market, the changing emphasis on security, the increased sophistication and prevalence of attack vectors out there, this is really impacting the design and development and certification of these modules and pushing them out to the cloud as well. So to begin, looking at things from a historical perspective, traditionally, what are the applications of FIPS 140-2 level 3 validated cryptographic modules? Typically, you'd see it used for government data and financial data. Yes, there are some other use cases, but predominantly, you see this type of data being candidates for protection. Now, that's the historical way of looking at things. Typically, the attack vectors that use of crypto modules in these contexts guard against would be on the intentional side of the spectrum. You look at organized crime. You look at things emerging now like hacktivism. You look at other aspects of intentional attack vectors. Now, what we're seeing is a dramatic increase and rise in the scope of where this hardened level of data protection is used. So now it's not only the financial industry, it's not only government. You're seeing automotive manufacturers, IoT device manufacturers, and especially the industrial Internet of Things. You're seeing shrinking of these crypto modules. You're seeing simultaneous growth in throughput. You look at data from 10 years ago that needed to be protected with this level of assurance, and you look at things like PINs, credit card numbers, things of the like. Nowadays, you have the rising prevalence of big data. You have ever-increasing volumes and types of data that fall within this scope. And so what we've seen along with that, going back to the past again, when you focus on financial data, government data, things like that, it's largely certification driven. So compliance mandates require that in order, for example, to accept PINs for the major card brands, you have to have a hardened cryptographic device to handle the validation of those PINs. And so as a result, you see the category of people in the must-have realm, people who need to have these devices, relatively small, relatively focused. You've got fewer people who are aware of it, they want to have it, they understand the benefits of a hardened level of security, But whether or not they actually implement it or not is largely up to budget and how sensitive that data is. Then even larger than that, you've got people who are just completely unaware of it altogether. No idea it even exists. If you say, here, you've got this data, you need to protect it with a hardware security module, they'll say, a what? And so what we're seeing now is a real shift in that. Over the last 5 years or so, with the increasing volume of data being protected, with the rise in sophisticated attacks and new attack vectors that target this data, you've seen a flip-flop in how the market views this. You've got more and more people, when you talk to them about FIPS validated cryptography, they say, yeah, absolutely. This is something we are aware of, we're in the process of implementing, we've already implemented, and it's something where, I mean, you even see it in the rise in attendance at events like this. You know, the prevalence of this technology and the importance of it in the day-to-day lives of businesses, consumers, and the like is only growing. Now, I want to run through, I'll let you all read this as I talk here, but a few use cases in particular, just to give a little bit more background context into where hardened security is used. Things like this. Hardware security modules generally are viewed as cryptographic muscle. They provide encryption and decryption services. That's the main focus. You've also got the PKI and certificate management side of things as well. And so this has a big impact on deployed devices, whether it's Internet of Things, whether you're managing authentication for users, certificate-based authentication of computers, workstations, digitally signing emails, invoices, electronic medical records, anything like that. You've got a lot more use cases for this type of technology nowadays than you previously saw. So this is where the rise in unintentional risks is really coming into play. So traditionally, when you've got compliance mandated industries and you see them implementing FIPS 140-2, common criteria validated, et cetera, cryptographic modules, you see this to prevent intentional attacks. You guard the secrets, whatever those secrets may be, within a tamper evident, tamper responsive crypto module. Now, what you're starting to see is the risk of unintentional attack vectors growing. Now, this stuff is complicated. It very much is from an implementation standpoint, from a usage standpoint, from a certification standpoint. It's something where, in order to have high assurance data security, you really have to make sure you're doing it right. So if you have the most sophisticated technology in the world, you've got the strongest algorithms, key strengths, etc., and you have one person holding all the key components, or you're not doing things according to best practices, that puts in a risk there that essentially nullifies all of the expense, time, and energy that went into acquiring this technology in the first place. So what we're seeing, lack of security awareness, we've got lack of defined best practices, you've got things like shadow IT, the increased use of cloud services for employees' needs, essentially skirting around the IT department, removing them from the control of things, that is increasing the sprawl of sensitive data. And when an organization doesn't have control over how that data is used, where it's generated, and most importantly, where it's stored and who has access to it, that creates some real problems here. So what we see here, going back to the two-sided aspect of things, the drive for increased numbers of industries to adopt hardened crypto is the result of attack vectors growing in sophistication, growing in volume. But on the other hand, what's driving the move to the cloud and for organizations to begin considering the role of externally driven third-party cloud-based offerings to house their crypto modules, to manage that infrastructure, and to deal with that, that is caused by the rise in unintentional attack vectors. And that's what we're going to be talking about now. From an architectural standpoint, you look at the design of a core cryptographic infrastructure. And when you look at it beyond just the realm of encryption, decryption, authentication, and validation of sensitive data, you roll in a number of other aspects into the mix. So you're no longer, when establishing an enterprise-grade environment for protecting data, you're not thinking about things from the standpoint of, all right, I've got this sensitive data, I need to encrypt it, I've got these devices that need to be authenticated. You're making it into a much larger scoped affair. So you look at things like monitoring, alerting, load balancing, disaster recovery, analytics, you know, adding a stronger level of intelligence to this environment and making it more than just pure cryptographic muscle is what a lot of organizations nowadays are starting to do. So you look at things in terms of a cryptographic resource pool like this, where an organization that might have maybe a dozen different use cases for crypto modules and their associated functionality, instead of having siloed divisions or entities within their organization, they build out a single standalone resource pool. It's managed by one group. It allows them to maintain control over things like firmware updates, monitoring, updates over time, redundancy, and general management of the infrastructure. And when you look at it from the opposite standpoint, where you have a siloed environment, you can often have disparate vendors in a single organization. You see management headaches really growing dramatically. Even the process, for example, of firmware updates on these types of cryptographic modules. I like to use the analogy of the people who paint the Golden Gate Bridge. Let's say you're an organization and you've got 50 crypto modules as part of your environment. So you're going to need to maintain those. You're going to need to keep them up to date. You're going to need to, just like with any system, patch them, apply firmware updates, and ensure that as part of your desire to follow best practices and honestly maintain compliance when you come on your periodic either reevaluations or audits or anything like that, you need to make sure to keep them up to date. So you've got 50 of these devices. You have to update the firmware on them. If you're managing these in a one-to-one relationship, it's exactly like the people who paint that Golden Gate Bridge. By the time they're done painting it and get to the other end, they're going all the way back to the beginning. And so imagine that from just a firmware update standpoint alone, by the time you've patched every single one of your devices in your infrastructure, because these are all managed under dual control and split knowledge, often for principles of disaster recovery and redundancy across multiple data centers, you know, by the time you patched all your devices, guess what? It's time to do it all over again. So moving to a cryptographic resource pool model like this, allowing you to handle this more from a holistic perspective, is really adding functional convenience to how organizations are deploying this. There are, however, some barriers to this model. You've got things like the actual design and development of the environment. Like I said earlier, this stuff is really complex. It's something where for organizations that don't have a defined need, have dedicated staff for it, it can be very, very cumbersome. You know, you look at, for example, in the financial services industry, maybe a credit union, a small bank, something like that, they do have a mission-critical need for hardened FIPS-validated cryptographic modules, for example, to validate PINs, to protect cardholder data, and the like. It's mission-critical, has to be online all the time, or they're essentially down for the count. But at the same time, once they get it set up, they don't really have to touch it except when firmware update time rolls around, when audit time rolls around, or when they need to add functionality. Well, from their perspective, they have people who have jobs responsible for other things. Essentially, managing those crypto modules is not part of their core responsibility. And so when you're talking about something that is absolutely mission critical to your business, do you really want the people operating it who might pick it up a few times a year and refamiliarize themselves? Oh, how do I log in again? All right, what do I do? Am I doing this right? Creates some risks there. Architectural complexity, upfront acquisition cost as well, especially for organizations that have moved from a siloed approach, potentially with multiple vendors in their environment, multiple flavors of these cryptographic modules, not even to mention the versions that change and are different. The complexity of tearing that all down and building that up again can represent some significant hurdles from a cost perspective. Now, we look at the move to the cloud as an opposite approach to this. There are still challenges involved with that as well. Key management, first and foremost. I know there have been some other presentations this week that talk in more detail about this exact topic. You can have all the devices you want, all the cryptographic modules you want in the field, and if you've got no way to get your keys onto those devices, why even bother? And so the challenge of key management and actually getting those keys on board in the first place is tricky. You don't want to trust a third party necessarily with your key components, so you have to have a way to do that. You've got latency considerations between multiple data centers. Let's say I've got my primary business applications here in Washington, D.C., but you know what? The provider I'm using happens to have a data center where these crypto modules are managed in Los Angeles. Well, guess what? That's going to be problematic. So considerations for data center housing and location are important. So when actually designing and developing an environment that is suited for the cloud, we've got a few areas and key pillars of focus that I wanted to talk about today. First is scalability. Typically, in an environment where you're implementing crypto modules, you have to consider peak load and peak usage. Look at maybe throughout a year or throughout some defined period of time, what's the highest volume you're going to get? Going back again to the financial services provider example, you look at Black Friday. Yeah, exactly. Black Friday, you consider, all right, maybe your volume is here on Black Friday, but guess what? Every other day of the year, you might be at 10% of that. So with on-premises crypto modules, you're paying essentially for that high level of value that you're not even using. And so with the cloud, you've got the ability to scale up, down, side to side, and focus on expansion of capacity without any downtime as well. So being able to modify that elastically is a very important component of it. Secondly, you've got the disaster recovery and redundancy standpoint. That's all fairly straightforward. This is mission-critical technology. These devices that we're designing and developing, we focus on them here on an individual basis, but when you look at their implementation in aggregate and what the use cases for them are, you can't have these going down. And so having assurance that they will be stable, up, online, and not going down is very, very critical and something that is made much more convenient by the cloud. Thirdly, you've got monitoring, alerting, responsive analytics. These things are typically managed, or often historically have been managed, by solely standalone software-based applications. Things that do provide strong value, but when you look at taking these same cryptographic modules that are historically used for cryptographic muscle and working them into other areas, being able to manage discrete events that occur within the environment and being able to intelligently respond to those in essentially the same manner that security orchestration technology would do, but with the hardened security that you can be enabled to make some pretty sophisticated changes to your environment. That's something that can also be enabled by this. And then finally, compliance. The scope of regulatory requirements, the number of things that are that we're responsible for, both from a design and development standpoint, but even more so from an ongoing operation and use perspective, is significant. And so for organizations that don't have the capacity or desire to deal with that, looking at the cloud as an option for that allows not only fulfillment of requirements, but expansion out into other areas, other use cases as well. And then expansion over time, just to round things out. One of the things we commonly deal with in this industry is, how do we plan for the future? How do we understand what's coming down the pipeline? How do we know to do this in advance? Well, rather than telling the end users, whether they're internal to your organization or external, all right, 5 years has passed, time for a refresh, you look at something like the cloud and it makes that seamless. So you're able to take advantage of the options out there. You're able to continue pushing the envelope from a design perspective as well. So to round things out here, we look at two different sides of things. You've got on-premises, you've got cloud for the deployment of the crypto modules we make. Is it a binary choice between the two of those? Absolutely not. What we're seeing is more and more adoption of a hybrid approach, where you look at advantages of a cloud-based environment, you look at the ability to replicate production environments, test environments, in an area where it's safe, scalable, has all the principles of disaster recovery and redundancy. And ultimately, what we need to consider as the designers, developers, and certifiers of this technology is how we prepare for this, how we take advantage of the benefits offered by the cloud, but at the same time being realistic about it and knowing that there are a lot of things to consider as part of this. And doing that from the very beginning of the process and considering the implementation of it is absolutely critical. And so right now, looks like we're running right out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and close down here. But I wanted to thank everybody for coming, and we'll be available afterwards if anyone wants to pull us aside to talk in more detail.
Thank you, Adam. It was great. Considering it's lunchtime, if anyone does have a question or two, when Adam's along this day, it's okay. If not, catch him outside in the hall.